Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. And I'm hoping my committee will get here, but we do have a quorum. I would now like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1548. And I'd like to ask Mark Mayer to come up and explain how the bill was actually drafted. And Elizabeth Rimley, do you want to say anything? You don't have to. Okay.
For the record, Mark Mayer from Legislative Council, Chair Mona Sanderson, Senator Shields, Senator Knope. I was requested to just briefly state how we went about drafting the bill, primarily, I think, because of its bulk and because of the fact that there have been concerns about scope of practice and stuff like that. As you know, what this bill attempts to do is attempts to clarify mainly older statutes that were enacted by the Legislative Assembly prior to 1990, which I discovered in my research, that referenced physician. And since that time, there have been additional types of healthcare practitioners who have been licensed to cover basically the same services, such as nurse practitioners and physician assistants. And so this bill is an attempt to merely update those statutes to include the proper references. As you guys are probably familiar, generally nowadays, Legislative Council attempts to write more broadly about scope of practice, something along the lines of healthcare practitioner, you know, whose authority allows them to do this under state law. For purposes of this bill, what we primarily did when we updated these references is we looked specifically at how other statutes that reference these professions are currently written in order to avoid any kind of judicial misinterpretation. And so that's how we went. If the statute involved a right or a duty, we included a specific reference to the licensing scheme under which they're going to be licensed. If the statute was merely descriptive in its nature in reference to these professions, then we didn't include the reference to the licensing scheme. We just wrote in the descriptive term. And so that's pretty much how we went about and decided to go about updating this. Do you have any other questions about that?
I'm on it.
Any questions about this?
No.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Chair.
Is Elizabeth Rimley here? And thanks, Mark, for all your work on this. You did a great job.
Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the committee, Elizabeth Remley here on behalf of the Oregon Society of Physician Assistants. Just one more quick thank you very much for letting us run this bill. We agree Mark did a great job on this. I wanted to put on the record today that we will be asking for an amendment to move on the House side. We hope that this bill can move through as written through the Senate floor, and then on the House side we'd like to amend the bill to do two things. One is to take out sections related to Chapter 743 and 743A, which are insurance codes. We've spoken with the insurance community, and we're going to take some time to look at those in more depth later. There are about 10 sections related to those two chapters in the bill. We've also worked with the Public Utility Commission. Currently, physician assistants are not one of the healthcare providers that may sign independently for a person to verify medical necessity for a telecommunication device. And we'd like to make sure that PAs can sign for that. We did have a PA in Southern Oregon whose patient was denied a TTY phone because they were a physician assistant signing for it instead of a physician or a nurse practitioner, even though that physician assistant was the patient's primary care provider and knew better than anyone whether there was a medical necessity. So the Public Utility Commission has given us this statute. They have said that they'd be neutral on this, but we'd like to make sure the PAs can sign for that. So we would want to add that on the House side. But we would like, in because of timing and everything in this short session, we'd like to move the bill as is and do the amendments on the House side.
All right.
That's it. Does anybody have any questions?
Okay, colleagues, the bill's ready to go if you're ready to go.
All right, thank you, Elizabeth. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1548 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1548.
Madam Chair, are you going to
be
there?
I'm here.
This is Northfield.
Unamended, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1548 to the Senate floor to do pass the recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1548 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Cameron here.
Aye.
Senator Knope.
Excused.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chairman O'Sanders.
Aye. Motion carries, and I will carry this bill. I will close. Is there anything else we need to do on this bill?
No, I was just going to see if Senator Knope is outside, but we can suspend the rules later.
Okay. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1548 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1526. It looks like we're going to carry this over. Senator Steiner Hayward, would you please let us know where we are?
Thank you, Madam Chair. After yesterday's committee hearing, the Oregon Health Authority had an opportunity to look further at the amendments, the Dash 2 amendments, and came to us making it clear that it actually made a lot more sense to have OHA develop a plan for implementing this first and then go to CMS with a waiver. So we're rewriting the bill. The bill, we're basically revamping it entirely to require OHA to develop a plan for how this would be implemented and then go to CMS for a waiver. And so we should have that ready for tomorrow.
Thursday.
Excuse me. I apologize. Thursday.
Okay.
So thank you for your indulgence for carrying it over again.
Great. So we are going to carry over Senate Bill 1526, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1526 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1542. And
no, that's a work session. Madam Chair, if I may bring the committee up to speed.
Yes.
Senate Bill 1542, we heard yesterday. At that time, there was a Dash 1 amendment brought before the committee. If you'll remember, this allows the private payers to hire home care workers through the registry maintained by the Oregon Home Care Commission. Requires the commission to establish payment rates for the private payers based on the cost to the commission and to establish the classification system for those home workers. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, Madam Chair. We do have a hall pass or fiscal light on the Dash 1 amendments and a no revenue impact on the Dash 1 amendments, so the committee has all the proper paperwork to take action on this bill if they choose.
Okay. We're in work session, and I need the Dash 1 amendments.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1542.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 1542. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1542 as amended by the Dash 1 amendments to the floor of the due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1542 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Aye.
Senator Knope.
Excused.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz.
No.
Chairman Sanders.
Aye. Motion carries, and it's on its way to Ways and Means. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1542 and open a work session on, 1560. Colleagues, this is the decision that I have made. We're not going to be moving this bill. I've talked to the proponent of the bill. And what I am going to have on what is sort of known as the Zoom care bill, we are going to have a work session. I'm not going to adopt, a work group. I'm not going to adopt the amendment that stipulates a work group because I would like to have the Telehealth Alliance of Oregon sort of chair or facilitate this committee through committee administration, committee services, And so with staff help from committee services and the Telehealth Alliance, and on this committee, I want the board representation to see what's happening with the boards
And if they have developed policies for telemedicine and disciplinary reaction or what their disciplinary process will be, that's I want them at the table. I want gurus from primary care providers, especially those who are doing telemedicine. That includes psychiatrists. I thought it was very interesting when we had the Clackamas County fire here with first responders. I would like them to be a part of this. We need to have a representative from a health plan that does telehealth, so I would like to have representatives from them. Would like to have a hospital that practices telehealth to be at the table, and
Madam Chair, I would
and PEB and OWEB there also.
Madam Chair, I would suggest I would specifically like to point to some of the certified smart folks from OHSU clearly need to be part of this work group.
Let's add them too then, because they do telehealth right now. All right, so that is what we're going to do. And with that, you have all that with you. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1560 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1562.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we had a hearing on 1562 yesterday. You'll recall that we had the Oregon Medical Association come forward with some suggested language, which was the dash two amendments, which clarified the notification requirements between a practitioner and the insurers. This modifies the requirement for health insurance coverage for services, medications, and supplies necessary for management of diabetes during pregnancy. You did adopt the dash two amendment yesterday. We were waiting on the paperwork. We do have the fiscal on the dash two, which is no fiscal impact. So the committee can take action on the bill as amended.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1562 as amended by the dash two amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1562 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Hayward. Aye.
Senator Knope.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Cruz, would you carry that bill?
Sure.
All right. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1562. And now I'm going out of order here. I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 1523.
Okay.
And Shane, would you come on up and tell us what's happened so far?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1523 requires self-insurance plans offered by Public Employees Benefit Board and the Oregon Educators Benefit Board and OHSU to provide coverage of applied behavioral analysis and treatment of children with pervasive developmental disorders. We just got the dash two amendments. I do believe that you have hard copies at the dais, as well as they might be up on OLAS, but I have not had a chance to review them.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. Yes, we do have amendments. I have not seen them myself yet because they have not been posted to OLIS yet. So,
okay, just assured us that it's up there now.
Oh,
I mean,
no,
we did it right
is,
before
yeah.
the meeting, but
and I don't think they met the 1 hour rule.
I'm sorry, it is the ones.
Okay,
I apologize.
Dash ones, yes,
the ones.
And not dash two. Yeah. So, with the. With the help of and support of Senator Amanda Sanderson, we were able to have a very constructive meeting in LC. All members were there. PEB was there. OHSU was there. We were having very good conversation, and that the result of that conversation is what you see before you with the Dash 1 amendments. The other people, including myself, have yet to go through and read this line by line to see how this reads. And we would very much appreciate it if we could have this held over until Thursday so we can all have a productive conversation. I do want to applaud everybody who's been very constructive, very open, and very constructive all the way along. And we would like to continue this conversation and finish it up on Thursday.
Great. Thank you, Shane. So OHSU and PEB and OEB, they need to look at the dash ones, and it's extremely important to get back to me to see if this is really what is a total agreement. All right. If not, it will be a 2015 issue. Okay. With that, I will want to carry over Senate Bill 1523. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 1523, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 1569. And we are considering the dash 4 amendments, I do believe. Sandy?
That is right, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 1569 requires the Oregon Health Authority to establish and maintain a list of designated high-priority chemicals of concern for children's health use in children's products. It requires the health authority to post that list. Information regarding health impacts associated with exposure to each chemical on the website requires OHA to periodically review and revise the list. We had a public hearing on this last week, February 4th. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We have the dash 4 amendments before us, which addresses the food, exempts food managed by USDA from the disclosure requirement. We have a hall pass on the dash 4 amendments so that Ways and Means can do a further analysis, and we have a no revenue impact on the dash 4.
I think someone is here to talk about the dash 4 amendments.
Madam Chair, if I might. My understanding is the dash 4 amendments were implemented. Never mind. You talk about dash 4 amendments. I won't talk about the dash 4 amendments.
We are quick in this committee.
Part with Sam.
We're making up for lost.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Angela Crowley Cook with Oregon Environmental Council. Thank you for hearing this bill today. And so the dash 4 amendments that are before you, there's only one small change from the dash 2 amendments, and that's to address an issue that the food processors raised during the hearing, and that's to make sure that the exemption for food and food packaging includes products regulated by the FDA and the USDA. So, sorry, not and, or the USDA, either one. So that basically, half a sentence was added in the dash 4 amendments.
Great. Thanks, Angela.
Thank you.
All right. Is there any questions or discussion? We are in work session. I believe I were
yes.
Open to a work session, and we're considering the dash 4 amendments.
Madam Chair, I always do my job as your vice chair on these, even when I oppose the bill.
All right. So
in this case, I will move the dash 4 amendment to 1569.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 1569. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Steinberg-Hayward.
Aye.
Senator Knope.
No.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Senator Cruz.
No.
Aye. Amendment adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1569 as amended by the dash 4 amendments to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation with the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1569 as amended with the dash 4s to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Senator Knope.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say I do appreciate the OEC and they're attempting to work on this and make it better. I really do, though, believe in the end that this is a federal issue. Some of us have sent a letter to our federal representatives that it does need to be taken up. It does need to be addressed because I think a patchwork across the country is not the right way to approach this issue. And I think all of us are concerned about toxics, whether they're in toys or in, you know, that we run into them in our daily lives. And I think we just need to make sure that whatever we're doing is science-based. And I'm not sure that this is a state issue at this point. I think if the feds didn't act for a long period of time beyond, you know, these next sessions, that I think it could become a state issue if they were unwilling to act. But essentially, I think what this bill does and what the previous version of this bill would have done, I don't think would have essentially improved anything beyond what the state of Washington has already done and that the information is already available. So OHA today could decide that they want to put that information on their website. It's already on a Washington website. So I don't think we're gaining any more information. I appreciate the people wanting to pass the bill, and I think I think if I was in their position, I'd probably feel the same, that you want to do that for a constituency. But at the same time, I think the information is already available, and I think we can review that based on what Washington has already done. And so I will be a no if this reaches the floor.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. I echo everything Senator Knope said, but I also want to point out that we have been given some very strong indications that the federal legislation does have legs and will be moving. And so based on that, I would say it's premature for us to be going out, because what will happen, number one, we're maybe spending money we don't really have to spend on this thing, but number two, this could be forcing us back here in 15 to redo this whole thing to comply with federal law. So the issue is important. I just think for us doing something unilaterally at this point in time is premature.
And of course, I'll put on the record again, as I did before, I don't trust the federal government at this point. And if there are enough states to come up with legislation like this, I think that it is sending a message, a strong, strong message to the feds that they've got to get their act together. And as far as the state of Washington, we are the state of Oregon, and I truly do believe that OHA should not just carte blanche accept what is in the state of Washington, that we should have our own, our state should be sort of in control of our own destiny when it comes to environmental issues like this. So with that, I think we adopted the dash fours.
Yes.
We adopted the dash fours.
There's a motion on the table.
And
there's a motion on the table.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Aye.
Senator Knope.
No.
Senator Chip Shields.
Aye.
Chair Cruz.
No.
Chairman Sanders.
Aye. Motion carries, and it is on its way to Ways and Means. And I see Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer. And Angela, thank you so much for all your work on this. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1569 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1553. And this is, we have the dash two amendments, everybody. It is ready to go.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This directs the governor to appoint an Oregon public guardian and conservator in the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman to provide public guardian and conservator services for persons without relatives or friends willing or able to serve as guardian or conservators. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We do have the dash two amendments before us, which I believe Senator Denbrough spoke to, but I'll just highlight that it clarifies the partnership between the Long-Term Care Ombudsman and the Residential Facilities Advisory Committee. It also specifies some staffing responsibility. We have a hall pass to Ways and Means on the dash two and a no revenue impact on the dash two, Madam Chair.
And I don't think there's anyone here to speak on the dash twos. I think
we're good.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 1553.
Senator Cruz moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 1553. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1553 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral of the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1553 as adopted with the dash two amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hayward.
Aye.
Aye.
Senator Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chairman Sanders?
Aye. Motion carries. It's on its way. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1553. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1519. Is Senator Girard here?
I need to go get him, Madam Chair, but I'm. Let me see who else signed up.
You're quick.
We've only got two bills to go.
I know. You went over 2 hours in the Ed Committee and didn't do a damn thing.
Okay, we are going to be at ease while we get Senator Girard.
Is he okay with the line, sir?
The Senate Health Care Committee on Health Care, the Senate Committee on Health Care and Human Services will reconvene, and we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 1519, and we have the dash, I think, two amendments. Is that right, Senator Judge?
That's correct.
Okay, please let us know what has happened.
I'm Senator Fred Girard. I represent Senate District 9. The dash twos. There was some concerns as to what we could do as far as the disciplinary action goes and if we could expunge the records. What LC has come up with is that we just direct the board to take it off their website, and they are very comfortable with that. So I'm not sure how the board's going to are you okay with that?
Senator Anderson, Chair. This is the first time.
Please introduce yourself.
Patrick Brotz, the Executive Director of the Board of Dentistry. I apologize. I've looked at the Dash 2 and talked with Senator Girard and others, and it appears that this would be a relatively compromise that could be accepted. I've just seen it for a few minutes, but if it's what it says it is, then I think it's something we could work with.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, we don't have the paperwork, so we can't move it today, but I just wanted to get your, if you would please come back and get back with us.
Sure.
If you have major concerns with
yeah.
the amendment.
Okay.
Because we'd like to move it on Thursday.
Okay.
I mean, that's the last day we can move it.
I understand.
Thank you, Ms. Brad.
Thank you,
I really
Senator.
Appreciate
yep.
it.
Thank
yeah.
you.
No, I'm just waving at Fred.
Oh, okay.
Trying to get rid of him.
All right. Thank you very much. And we are going to carry over Senate Bill 1519 to Thursday. I don't know the date. Thursday, 13th. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1519, and we're on our final bill. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1543.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1543 makes the reduction of hours worked by a full-time employee for the sole purpose of preventing the employee's eligibility for coverage under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act unlawful employment practice. It imposes a penalty for that violation, specifies that aggregate total of hours worked by a part-time faculty member at more than one public institution of higher education shall be considered in determination of full-time status of faculty membership for certain purposes. And I believe we're waiting for Senator Dembro. We were going to try and text him to get him here quickly, but if you want to...
And we have the panel, I think, Senator Dembro and then Alana.
And then Barry Edwards.
And is it...
Barry Edwards.
Barry Edwards? Alana?
Yeah. Okay. She's
with that. Gary. Alana, how do you say your last name?
Guinea.
Yes.
And I'm not sure where Senator Dembro was. I would know he was hoping to
right.
speak
we'll,
first.
Right. We'll call his office.
Jacob, are you calling Senator Dembro's office? There he is.
Senator Dembro.
You guys are fast.
I didn't know we would be this fast, but a lot of the bills we've already heard or we're carrying over.
Why don't you start there? Okay. But thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Michael Dembro, State Senator for District 23. That's Northeast Southeast Portland. I'm proud to bring before you Senate Bill 1543. Thank you for scheduling it. We're going to start off hearing from Barry Edwards, one of the people who would be affected by this bill. And then I'll go into some of the details of the bill, and Ilana will follow me with more. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barry Edwards, and I am a part-time faculty member in Oregon Community Colleges, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today, especially given the efficiency of the committee, since I have a class to teach at 6 p.m.
So, at which college?
Mount Hood.
My district.
Yes, I'm one of your constituents. Thank you.
Sure, that wasn't an accident.
So, for the record, my name is Barry Edwards. I'm a teacher at both Mount Hood Community College and Portland Community College, and at both locations, I teach mathematics. Between the two colleges, I teach approximately 1.5 times a full load of classes compared to my full-time colleagues, including summer terms. I'm not unique. In fact, part-time faculty at community colleges across the nation, including Oregon, are the majority of faculty now. We typically get few benefits and work for 40 to 60% of a full-time wage per class taught. And while it is true that our full-time colleagues have extra duties besides teaching, those duties rarely take up to more than 20% of their workload. Now, my full-time colleagues are professionals who are increasingly abused, minimized, and eroded in numbers. They are compensated much less than most other professionals and contribute to society much more than most by teaching our future leaders, workers, and citizens. Full-time or part-time faculty and instructors all teach you, your children, and sometimes even your parents. Teaching at all levels is an investment in our state's future that we can no longer afford to take lightly. I ask you to consider how differently part-time faculty, like myself, are treated. We are every bit the professionals as our full-time colleagues, and yet we are treated with much less respect and fairness than full-time faculty. We are not less than they in any way, except the lack of equity on how we are compensated. In this environment, fairness and respect for the work that we as part-time faculty do is essential. The Affordable Care Act compliance bill, Senate Bill 1543, would go a long way towards ensuring more fairness and respect for so-called part-time faculty like me. Currently, part-time faculty get to combine their work at multiple Oregon community colleges for the purposes of calculating their PERS eligibility, retirement eligibility and balance, so it is only fair and logical to be allowed to do the same for calculating eligibility for the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. The cost of this bill is small, especially relative to the good that it will do for many of my part-time faculty colleagues. The need for this bill is great. How can any educator be as effective as they are asked to be when they have medical concerns for themselves or family members? How can any professional be asked to give their best work, including each of you, when they are ill or family members are ill? How do you feel when a family member is very ill? Now consider how much worse you would feel if that illness puts your finances or even your home at risk. I urge passage of Senate Bill 1543 for our part-time community college faculty, for our community college students, and for the great state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Perry. I really appreciate you coming, taking the time away from your workload to be here. And I can relate to what you're saying. I have a friend who actually graduated with me from Gresham High, she is a single mom, but and teaches math. And she had she needed to teach at three different community colleges. She taught at Mount Hood, she taught at PCC, and then what's the community college in Vancouver?
Yeah, Clark.
Clark Community College. And so I think we're in a dichotomy here in a sense, because we don't have the funding to adequately give to the community colleges. But I so want to thank you for the work that you do and for the students that you teach in helping make Oregon a better place to live. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Michael Dembro. So, colleagues, one of the challenging and I think harmful elements of our healthcare system in this country has been the way that access to health insurance has been tied to employment. It has led employers to make employment decisions that have been harmful to their businesses, leading them to hire multiple part-time employees when it really would have been best for them to hire one full-timer, better for them and their business. And it's obviously been harmful to their employees, requiring them to cobble together multiple jobs just to stay out of poverty, or barely out of poverty in many cases. The Affordable Care Act has the laudable goal of extending access to good health care to more Oregonians. But in order to secure passage, Congress ultimately chose to keep employment-related insurance as a key part of assuring coverage via the employer mandate for large employers that begins to go into effect in 2015. Unfortunately, that means that many of the anomalies that we've been suffering under will continue. Most notably, workers are going to see their hours cut in order to keep them under the 30-hour threshold contained in the Affordable Care Act. This is for employers with more than 50 employees. Indeed, some large employers have already publicly stated their intention to cut hours for their workers to below the 30-hour-a-week threshold in order to avoid both providing health care and incurring tax penalties that would happen if they were not providing the health care. As a result, workers face a double hit. Their paychecks will go down because their hours are cut, plus they don't get access to the employer plan. This bill seeks to discourage that from happening. Ilana is going to speak more to the first part of the bill, which addresses the needs of all workers. I'm going to focus on Section 4 of the bill, which addresses specifically the situation of someone like Barry Edwards. Over the last two decades of higher education, as Barry mentioned, particularly in community colleges, but also increasingly at universities, they have become increasingly taught by part-time faculty, also known as adjunct or contingent faculty. The model of using adjunct faculty had its start in vocational ed, where the goal was to get people to come in and share their expertise moonlight, as it were, as teachers. And that was a great goal. It was a great aspect of the community college system. But more and more, in order to meet tight budgets, colleges and universities have been relying on part-timers for their core courses, their transfer courses, remedial courses, in order to avoid having to pay benefits for the workers. These are excellent employees, excellent teachers, equally credentialed with their full-time colleagues. I can tell you that this system would not work without them. They make huge sacrifices. And many of them, as you heard from Barry, and as Barry is a living example, he's still living, it's good to see, are facing real difficulties. But they're also contributing really an enormous amount. Unfortunately, we've heard reports from around the country of colleges and universities that are already starting to reduce the hours of teachers, their class hours, in order to prepare in advance for the employer mandate next year. I've been tracking some of these in the various higher education publications. And it was actually the subject of one of the best attended sessions at a recent higher ed human resource manager conference. And, you know, anecdotally, we're hearing of a lot of institutions moving in that direction. You know, one example is Allegheny, Community College of Allegheny County, which has already begun cutting course loads. And the their president, Alex Johnson, announced the plan in an email to faculty and staff members in December. Quote, as you probably know, the Affordable Care Act has redefined full-time employees as those working 30 hours or more per week, Johnson wrote. As a result, the college must adjust hours of some temporary part-time employees and adjuncts to comply with the new legislation's conception of part-time employment. Most presidents are not being as clear and expressive of what their intention is, but this is you know, really a danger. And you know, for adjunct faculty, as for all workers, the blow is twofold. It quashes their hopes of employer-assisted health insurance while cutting income for those who are who previously had taught a larger course load. And it's specifically a problem for people like Barry, who, you know, you put all his hours together teaching at public colleges, and he more than meets the threshold. But if you have to look at it institution by institution, you know, he's out of luck. And you know, I think most of us would agree that that's just not right. You may not know that in Oregon we have a practice of allowing faculty to combine their hours at public colleges and universities for purposes of PERS eligibility. That has been in effect since the early 1990s, where the PERS threshold is a 0.6 FTE, you know, equivalent of a full load, and the faculty are able to combine their hours, and at the end of the year, there's a look-back process where the employment is compared, and if they meet the threshold, then the college contributes. That same methodology was adopted in 2009 for a bill that we passed, House Bill 2557, whose purpose was to allow part-timers to become part of the OEB system, the Oregon Educator Benefit Board. There was no funding for them, but they could at least on a self-pay basis become part of OEB, then have access to that. And in many cases, they were supported by their individual institutions through the collective bargaining agreement, if that was in place, so they could get help in paying those premiums. But there, too, it used the methodology of that we used for PERS, looking at an FTE, you know, the percentage of a full load that would meet the qualifying level, and then allowing them to collect their hours at the different public institutions where they teach. Section 2 of House Bill 2557 says, quote, a part-time faculty member at a public institution of higher education is eligible for the same health care benefits as full-time faculty members if the part-time faculty member is eligible for membership in the public employees retirement system by teaching either at a single public institution of higher education or in aggregate at multiple public institutions of higher education during the prior year. What this bill is asking is that this same methodology, that the same process be used when determining, you know, who should fall under the employer mandate for post-secondary education, public post-secondary education in this state. I think it's, you know, it's the right thing to do. Yes, there is a cost attached to it, and, you know, I know that our college, I know firsthand that our colleges and universities are struggling, but the whole purpose of the employer mandate is for those large employers to participate in providing health care for their employees. And, you know, I think that the number of people who are in Barry's situation is a limited number. I agree with him. But for people in that situation, they really need this. The cost for the different institutions, you know, the individual institutions is not going to be outrageous, because we're talking about a small number of people who would meet that 30-hour a week. That's a very high level, even if you translate it into an FTE basis. That's, you know, like 0.75, 0.8 of a full-time load. That is a very high threshold. It's not going to apply to that many people. But it will do substantial good, I think, for people who are doing so much for educating Oregonians. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions about details. But let me
Alana, why don't you go forward with your testimony first?
Great. Thank you, Chair Monis-Anderson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ilana Guinea, here on behalf of the Oregon AFL-CIO. You know, quite a few people warned me when we brought this bill forward that we were going to be opening up a debate on health care reform. And to be perfectly honest, I think that the problem that we're seeing, the problem that Senator Dembro described, that Barry described, of workers who should be getting health care coverage and aren't, is important enough that it was worth that risk. That being said, I know that everybody on the committee, everybody in the room, has different opinions on the health care reform that's been passed both at the state and the federal level, and I'd ask only that as you look at this bill and these fixes that we're trying to pass, if you are opposed to that reform, you try to put that aside and look at how to help Oregonians. If you supported it, you try to look past that support and be willing to see that there are some flaws that we can fix here at the state level. I believe that when we set out to reform our healthcare system, everyone agreed that the goal was to get more people better healthcare coverage at an affordable price. Unfortunately, there are two very specific groups of people who are beginning to fall through the cracks as we work toward that goal. We think SB 1543 gives us an opportunity to begin to close those gaps. The second half of the bill, as Senator Dembro described, by ensuring that adjunct faculty at our public institutions aren't falling through the cracks and are able, when they are working a full-time course load, to get the health care coverage that they need. And the first part of the bill to help hourly workers. I've got a packet of articles that I meant to bring up for all of you that is sitting with my stuff, and I apologize I rushed in from another hearing, but I'll make sure that it's handed out to you as soon as I'm done here. And you'll see in those articles multiple examples of workers nationwide whose employers are announcing publicly that they are going to cut workers' hours to below 30 hours a week, specifically to avoid complying with the employer mandate in the Affordable Care Act, specifically because they don't want to provide health care coverage. Beyond just those companies who are publicly making these announcements, there are workers from across different industries who are reporting that this is happening. The website Business Insider has a list, in fact, of 300 public and private institutions that have already made these announcements. These are official, coming from executives in the company announcements. These are not things that we're assuming are happening. This isn't a fake problem. We're talking about Staples, Cabela's, Forever 21, Trader Joe's, Sherry's, an Oregon company. And I've actually heard from various home care workers that this is happening in their industry as well. There are about twice as many Americans working part-time or, under this law, full-time 30 to 35 hours a week than there are those who work 25 to 30 hours a week. Twice as many. If we see those numbers change, if we see those people working 30 to 35 hours a week cut to any large extent to 25 to 30 hours, that's going to have an impact. It will have an impact on those families' budgets. It will have an impact on those communities as those families have less to spend. And frankly, it will ultimately have an impact on our services as those families are looking for services to make up the difference. At minimum wage, and I do think that where we'll see workers' hours cut the most will be at lower paying jobs, a 5-hour a week cut is equivalent to $45.50 a week in lost wages. Over the course of a year, that's $2,366. To you and I, $2,000 a year may not sound like a lot of money, but when you're living on minimum wage, making $20,000 a year, $2,000 is a significant piece of your family's budget. So here's what's happening. These Oregonians are being told they'll make, at a very minimum, $2,000 less a year. And at the same time, their health care coverage, if they have any, is going to be dropped. If they don't have any, the health care coverage that they thought they were going to be getting, that their families have been planning for finally having after years of not having health insurance, is going to disappear, that hope. And they'll be left having to purchase their own coverage while making $2,000 less a year. We can fix this at the state level. We can make sure that hours don't get cut. And that's what this bill is hoping to do. It says that for employers who employ 100 or more people, those large employers for whom the employer mandate goes into effect in 2015, you can't cut workers' hours simply to avoid the employer mandate. And the language in the bill is very clear that you can't cut it solely for that reason. We're not saying that if an employer has business reasons to cut a worker's hours, we're trying to create another liability by any means. But if the sole reason is that you're trying to avoid compliance, if you've made an announcement in the news, if you send an email to your workers saying this is what you're doing, that's not okay in Oregon. That's not going to fly. And for those employers who have 50 to 100 people employed, they actually just earlier this week got a reprieve. They have an extra year before they have to comply with the employer mandate. That gives them almost 2 full years from today to figure out how to do this. Collectively, we're talking about 4% of Oregon employers. This is not going to affect a lot of employers, but those employers employ about 60% of Oregonians. Most of those Oregonians aren't going to be affected by this. Most are not low-wage hourly workers whose hours are going to be cut. But for those who are, we're talking about less than 4% of employers who we're putting this extra requirement on to make sure that Oregonians can continue to pay their bills. Barry spoke to a perfect example of how this affects folks in the community college and college world. I'm sorry that we don't have somebody here today who can give you a real-life example of somebody affected on the hourly side. One of the news articles that you'll receive does have an interview with an Oregon worker who can tell her story. Most of those people are working, though, and it's hard to get them down here. We think that this is a simple solution to a very real problem. We think that it is, frankly, an affordable solution, and we think it's too important for you to pass up. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I hope that you'll take this opportunity to support Oregonians and pass Senate Bill 1543.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you. I kind of bristle a little bit with your characterization of employers as cutting hours just to avoid paying something. In most cases, if employers are going to have to cut hours, it's because they can't afford it, and that's the reality of it. Is this getting into a debate over the Affordable Care Act, which is not affordable? Yeah, it is. You know, employers are doing this quite simply because this ridiculous act is forcing them to do things that they can't afford to do, pure and simple. And what this would do would be to put some of them out of business. You know, this is a business practice. I'm a small business person. Okay, I'm not big enough to fit into these categories at this point in time. I provide health care coverage for my employees, okay, but I provide what I can afford and what we've agreed on. You get into the ACA, and you don't have those choices. You have mandated coverages that in some cases are incredibly expensive. And if I was forced to go into that with my employees, I couldn't afford to carry them anymore. I couldn't do that. It's not that I don't like them. I do. They're family. I care about my employees. But I have to, bottom line, I have to serve. And this is going to put people out of business, and it's just absolutely wrong. Other than that, it's fine.
Senator Knope.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. I was going to say some similar things, but Elena, we had a discussion when you came to meet with me. And I'm sympathetic to the community college issue and the part-time issue. But this bill is the wrong bill. Because as we talked about this issue in my office, you can't fix this. You can't fix. You're basically saying we had all this government regulation with healthcare, and hey, I know, let's fix it. Let's do more regulation. Yeah, wrong way. You know, we need to go back to a freer market for healthcare that isn't constrained by all the government regulation that's costing actually more than what policies were before. And so we're not going to fix this issue for Oregonians, because Obamacare is ultimately going to implode. It has to implode because you can't pay for it. We're not paying for it. We're actually borrowing money to pay for it right now. And to think that somehow that, you know, this regulation is going to fix it, it's not. And the biggest problem I have with this is you're basically testifying and saying you can do it, you just can't say you're doing it. Which to me is a free speech issue, more than just the regulation itself. And I get where people want to stop companies and employers from reacting to what's been passed, but the truth is it's not going to work. It's you know, we've added a whole bunch of people to the system. The problem is that the people who were added, who signed up, we're essentially getting it for free. And so there's just additional cost to the government and to the young invincibles, as they call them, who aren't signing up. And so ultimately it will implode, and really the answer is to repeal Obamacare and go back to a freer market that encourages people to take responsibility for their own health care. And Senator, I agreed with you. Your first sentence was just right on. And if you would have stopped after that, we would have been 100% agreement. Because I think employees should be responsible for their own health care. And we need to get back to a situation similar to retirement, where people have their own, call it a 401k, and they pay for their health care, they pay for their health insurance through that, and they control it versus the government mandating what you can do. Because that's what we're into, is we're just government mandate after government mandate about what you can do. And I recognize that there aren't very many questions in what I'm saying.
and the hour is late.
But I want to make clear that everybody cares about their employees. Jeff cares about his employees. I care about my employees. And we do cover, we actually cover a part-time person, and we made accommodation in our rules to go from, they could only work 32 hours a week. So we moved from 40, this was years ago, we moved from 40 down to 30 just to accommodate that person who is extremely costly to our system. But that was a choice that we made, but we're also a nonprofit. And that was a decision that our board, you know, wanted to do that. But these businesses have to make money. So it's not like they're not trying to avoid it just because. They're trying to avoid essentially going out of business. And so that's the decision that they're making. And so, I wish that the fix that you're proposing would actually solve the problem. But it won't. And, you know, that's why I can't support it.
Any other? Oh, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following the grand tradition set by my good colleagues, I'm just going to say something rather than ask a question.
senators, you're all letting us off very easily.
Well,
use inflection in your voice. And
is it kind of like that game where you have to just ask your whole thing in questions? All right. Anyway, I appreciate the concerns raised by my colleagues, and overall, I'm pretty free market as Democrats come. That being said, when you cite public statements by very large corporations that they're actively planning to pursue this course of action, and when you have people who are trying very, very hard to be self-sufficient and made choices about their places of employment because of the benefits they were going to get, and who are trying very, very hard not to have to depend on government services and are trying to play the game according to the rules, as it were, and work the way we expect them to work, and then through no fault of their own suddenly have their hours cut so that their employers can avoid a major expense and just hire more, part-time employees, it's unethical, frankly. And it's, I value and am grateful to my colleagues, Senator Knope and Senator Cruz, for the choices that they've made. And if every single business person or corporation was as ethical and thoughtful and concerned about its employees as they were, we wouldn't have even been here in the first place. We wouldn't have had to pass the Affordable Care Act, because this wouldn't be an issue. But they aren't. They aren't like Senator Knope and Senator Cruz in terms of working closely with their employees to figure out plans that both support their employees' health care needs and make their businesses fiscally financially viable. They have a different set of standards. I don't know why they chose those standards, but they have. And when we have Oregonians who are working for large corporations like this, who are trying very, very hard to be self-sufficient, to not depend on government services, to play by the rules, and then because the federal government changes the rules, they're suddenly getting to a place where they're going to have to depend on state services all of a sudden, it just makes no sense to me. In other words, we're saying we're going to let them, but the government is going to pick up health care for these people all of a sudden, and the corporations don't have to do it. That doesn't seem very sensible to me either, frankly. And I think the other point that I would make with regard to the very compelling testimony we heard, my best friend is in a very similar position to yours. She teaches part-time at Portland State and part-time at Washington State. And she can afford to do it because her husband has a full-time job with HP, and he gets the benefits for their family, because she gets absolutely no benefits, despite the fact that she's now taken on a role as an academic coordinator for one of the programs she teaches in, which you would think would be part of one of those additional duties that full-time professors would have. But she's not. She's still adjunct, and she still will be adjunct. Now, she had a very, very high-powered career in finance at HP. She's got a master's. She was very well respected, and she elected to take a different path because she wanted a little bit more time with her family. She wanted to be able to teach, which she loves to do. She wanted to be able to help students who are choosing, especially at places like Portland State, where many of them are coming back into school to earn credentials that will allow them to have better paying jobs and not be dependent on anybody in the long term except themselves. And she wouldn't have been able to make that choice if she were the primary wage earner and the primary provider of benefits for her family because of policies like these. So we want to encourage people to be innovative, to not be tied to their jobs. This is one of the ways that we can do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been basking in the glow of being in 100% agreement with Senator Knope for a sentence, but I'm afraid I'm going to lose that now because, one of the alternatives that the Affordable Care Act, or when Congress was contemplating the Affordable Care Act, one of the alternatives that they could have considered and rejected was looking at a public option or taking Medicare and extending it to the entire population. And that, I think, would have been the more sensible route to go, as most other industrial countries have handled their health care providing. But they chose to, as I mentioned, they chose to stay with the more traditional route of keeping health care coverage tied to employment, at least to some extent. And, you know, hence going the route of the employer mandate. I think that the hope, and maybe I may be echoing Senator Steinward Hayward here, but the hope, I think, was well-intentioned, you know, that corporations would do the right thing, especially large ones, and, you know, would not cut their employees' hours. Recognizing they have, you know, they have issues, they have challenges, but they're challenges that are going to be faced by their competitors as well. And, you know, I do believe that most of these large companies can find a way to comply and not cut people's hours. You know, I do think, you know, with the issue of how do you know if, you know, if there's a wage and hour violation, that is, that an employer is cutting hours solely for the reason of avoiding compliance. You know, I think if it's not simply that they have to make a public statement and thus this would curtail their free speech rights, but, you know, I think if you see an employer suddenly reducing a whole class of employees' hours, you know, from, 35 to 29, you know, I think there's probably something going on there that would merit at least raising the issue with BOLI. And that is the goal of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a lot of people to testify, so
I'll let it go for now.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it, especially Barry. The other two I see a lot.
Thank you.
All right. With that, Jan Meekins, J.L. Wilson, and Bill Perry.
Thank you, Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. AOI would pretty strongly oppose a concept like Senate Bill 1543, and I'm just going to speak to specifically Section 2 of the bill. The first thing that really sticks out on the bill is that the burden of proof is on the employer to prove that the hour cuts are due to Obamacare. Now, granted, it's been talked about that a statement could be made on email or someone could be explicit about it, but I promise you any reduction in hours is going to at least prompt the litigation or prompt the inquiry from BOLI on this. And, I mean, let me tell you, employers don't feel out of the woods yet. I mean, managing hours, managing payroll, managing those costs is just so critical at this juncture. And employers are actively managing hours for purposes of meeting bottom lines. I mean, it's just a matter of business survival. And so when you have the issue of hour reductions, which is inevitable in some cases, you are going to open up the door of a potential claim that it is due to Obamacare. Now, the claim, there's not a bar to the claim that says, well, the claim has to be just because of Obamacare. The claim's going to be filed, and then you're going to find out whether it was solely due to Obamacare, and I think that opens the door too wide. And, of course, we are talking about BOLI inquiries as well as private rights of action on this bill. The second thing I'd point out is that the field keeps changing on the ACA, and you don't even know what the playing field is yet with the federal law. Yesterday, the employer mandate was suspended or delayed for another year for the second time. So now we're into 2016 before implementation of the employer mandate, at least for the 50 to 99 employee demographic. The 100 and plus, all you have to demonstrate is that you're insuring 70% of your employees, not the full 100%. Those were the regs released just yesterday. And you have to certify with the IRS in order to gain this extra year of flexibility. You have to certify, much like this bill states, that you did not cut any hours or reduce anybody below 30 hours to meet those employees. employee thresholds. So this is kind of being done on a federal level already, but the larger point is we have no idea what the ACA is going to look like, let alone to with enough clarity and predictability to start to implement state legislation to, in essence, enforce an hours worked threshold. And then finally, the final point I'll make is, you know, what if employers do experience the rate shock that we saw in the individual market last year? I mean, the next domino to fall is going to be small group and then large group. I mean, we haven't even begun to see what the cost ramifications for ACA is. And, I mean, if it resembles what we saw in the individual market, then you've got a very real possibility we've got some serious problems on our hand with regard to affordability. And now we have a law that basically locks in place the hours of the employees. And then at that point, I'd be suggesting I wouldn't be worried about hours. I'd be worried about jobs because that's the, you know, there's only a limited pot from which to pay, you know, payroll and benefits. And if the ACA prompts, you know, healthcare costs to increase and that eats up more of what you've got to pay employees, then we're running into problems if we've got a unlawful employment action on the backside that says you can't be flexible with your employee hours to help mitigate those costs and keep your folks employed. And I think that is a serious issue long term. But again, we don't know what we're dealing with. But I would be worried based on past experience that this is it is a likely outcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan.
Bill. Yeah, for the record, I'll let her back clean up. For the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association, I do kind of want to talk about the fact that, you know, a lot of these cuts are not necessarily without the involvement of the employees, because I think a lot of this, the way these reductions in health insurance over the last few years has been kind of a mean-spirited employer or anything else. We've obviously, if you've got more than probably three restaurants, you're going to fall into the ACA and the bigger employer group. And we've been going out to D.C. to talk about some technical fixes to this bill, not repealing, just because there are a lot of flaws in the way it's written. And we obviously have a lot of people who don't work full time, and a lot of them choose that because they've got kids, they don't want to work the full 40 hours. So our industry has been very flexible in time schedules, so we have a lot of people that work around 30 hours. We've had a shrinking, well, one of the biggest benefit packages the ORA when I started over 17 years ago was healthcare. We've been losing more and more healthcare clients, and we can't get a plan now, an association health plan, and it's because as rates have gone up, employees have chosen that it's not worth it to pay their share. When they opt out, I don't get the 50 or 70% participation to keep my plan. And so a lot of employer plans have gone away because employees have chose not to participate, which is a problem. So once again, we can't get an association plan. A lot of our members can't get plans, so they've gone to management-only plans. That's just something that has happened in the marketplace. Now, under the ACA, I've had notification requirements to where I've had to send out to my employees what's going on. Now, we're going to fall into this act because a lot of our employers have basically said, if you're working around the 30-hour range, we're going to probably need you to change. We're either going to have you go higher or lower. So those notifications have already gone out because this was not in place. And they did this for two reasons. First is, when you're talking about wage earners that are in the $10, $12, $15 an hour range, health insurance on an hourly basis for a 30-hour employee is pretty high. And so what the employer is saying is, you get up in that 30 to 40-hour range, the cost of the benefit, when you spread it around hours, goes cheaper. It's more cost-effective if I get them at a higher. And so what they've gone is gone to the employees and said, you get your choice because you work here. Okay, do you want to go higher so I can provide you health care, or do you want to go lower? And the employees made those choices. I've had a lot of employees that have chosen to go on lower. Now, they're on record because they chose to go lower to avoid health care. They made that choice, but this bill does not protect that employer giving them that choice. They're now in violation of this law if it passes. And the second is, if I can drive that hourly rate up so everybody over 36, 38, pick your number, is in, I can start to get a participation rate that gets me back in the pool. So the employer is trying to figure out a way to make it work. But remember, a lot of the notification requirements have already gone out. So, you know, there are employers that have said this. And, you know, I'm not saying there aren't bad employers out there, everything else, but you're changing the rules of the game after we're about halfway down the track. And so you're going to place, I think, a lot of people that are trying to do the right thing in harm's way with this bill. Because I know there are people out there that have reduced or planning to reduce hours once this kicks in because they've already notified their employees of it. So like I said, it would have been a different conversation had this all happened at the same time, but you are going to hurt some fairly large employers, even though I think they were trying to do what is in the best interest of their employees. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Let's go ahead with Jan.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairwoman and members of the committee. My name is Jan Meekums, the State Director for NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business. We have about 7,500 small business members in the state of Oregon, throughout the state of Oregon, and every type of business imaginable. I got more response originated from my members on this single bill than anything yet this session. And what they said is this will put many small businesses out of business. Our boots on the ground are our salespeople, and they are getting the people they speak to, members and non-members, prospects for members, they're very alarmed at this bill. Many of the reasons that were already mentioned, as JL mentioned, is the liability that it opens and putting the burden on a small business owner to prove that their decision was other than in regards to health care, or maybe it was in regards to health care, has already been mentioned. Also, Senator Cruz mentioned it costs a lot to bring on a new employee and to train them and to keep them. And for most of our employers, their employees are like family. They care about them. They want to provide health care. And if they can, they do. And if they don't, it's usually because they can't and they don't have health care themselves. Obviously, the Affordable Care Act was trying to remedy this. What has just occurred and what this bill is trying to fix was predictable. It was communicated. We communicated about it tremendously while the law was under consideration and after it passed, and now it has come to pass. It's like someone is ill, you give them a drug. It creates side effects. You give them a drug for those side effects. Then they have more side effects, and pretty soon down the line, they are on 10 drugs and they're almost dysfunctional. Well, that's what we're beginning to do with this act and the remedies for the problems that it's causing. I agree with Senator Canope. What we need to do is go back and we need to fix what is causing those illnesses in our health care coverage in Oregon and throughout the country. And the law was created as it was. And what we have is people are taking that law and they're complying with it. And how they comply with it is maybe change the dynamics of the hours that their employees work. And as was mentioned, it's not because they don't want to take good care of their employees, it's what they can afford. And for some employees, they would prefer to have a part-time job than no job if the results of this law made them have to close their doors. I've given you written testimony. I concur with what's been set up here. This is a very, very troublesome bill. It opens up a Pandora's box of litigation. For small businesses, they go to work. If they are susceptible to this bill, they would go to work with the threat that every employee is a potential lawsuit. And one lawsuit and them having of alleged noncompliance with this bill and going to BOLI and then going to civil court and them having to hire an attorney to defend themselves, that one thing in a small business employer in this right now trying to survive could cause them to shut their door. And I just think this is, they're trying to navigate really rough waters in the application of the Affordable Care Act, and this will add such onerous additional challenge to them trying to do that.
Question. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming up. All right, I would like to call Tim Cowan, Andrea Henderson, and Sandy. Is it Radke?
Radu.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tim Cowan. I'm testifying as a private citizen. I'm also a founder of a small business, and I was a senior vice president and regional manager for the Mid-Willamette Valley, Central and Eastern Oregon for First Interstate Bank. I went from Lincoln City to Ontario, about 700-plus employees and over $1 billion in assets. I am neither for nor against the bill. I need the answers to five questions to do so. Number one, what is the definition of an employer? Two, what is the impact of the number of employees on compliance, and will that change? Three, what condition is made for the financial impact of not reducing hours of the employees and or the other employees in the company, so it can be the employer or the other employees? If I don't reduce the salary or number of hours, what will the impact be for my other employees? I have talked to a number of small businesses where the owner may retire or reduce the size of their business based upon their perceived of what the Affordable Care Act will be. What considerations are made for small businesses where it represents the owner's primary source of income or net worth? In my small business, I had a gentleman whose wife was suffering from cancer. I allowed him to adjust his work schedule to care for his wife. The cost to the company of salary and reduction in sales exceeded over $50,000. About 15 years later, I ran into him. The only thing he said to me is, I saved his life. When I sold my company, one of the conditions was that every employee would have employment with a purchasing company. That was taken out of my proceeds of the sale. Don't assume that all owners of small businesses are motivated solely by income. Providing ongoing employment for my employees superseded the financial impact on me. Number four. Does Senate Bill 1543 allow for an agreement prior to employment? Does it take into account an employee's preference for an increase in salary, promotion in lieu of insurance coverage? This can occur when the insurance is provided from another source, like a spouse or retirement benefits. I'm a retired Army, and so I have TRICARE. Also, does it take into consideration an employee's request for training and or change in job responsibilities where it reduces the financial impact of the employee? Number five, what prevents an employee from intimidating their employer? Intimidating an employer is not limited to filing a complaint. They are aware that the small business has limited financial resources. The small business may not be able to survive the distraction. I don't care about attorney fees or anything else, it's the distraction from the business. Based on number five, the employee is in control.
Thank you. I'm not sure we could address every one of your questions, but I think that if you could submit them in writing to us, I'm sure that we can find some staff to help out on answering some of your questions. But I want to thank you for being that good employer. And I know there are a lot out of there, and I know that there's a lot of questions out there regarding the Affordable Care Act. And so thank you for testifying.
Madam Chair, I had it scanned into the
Is it
the committee?
Is it?
So,
yes.
Okay.
It is. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association, and testifying today in opposition to Senate Bill 1543, and have submitted some written testimony to you as well. What I'd like to do is give you a little bit of background on some of the adjunct faculty issues at community colleges and some of the problems with trying to implement this bill. Under the Affordable Care Act, there is that requirement for 30 hours. That is difficult requirement for community colleges, and it's been an issue across the country in terms of how to define what is 30 hours for part-time faculty. There is not a standard definition, nor has a standard definition been issued on the national level. Yesterday, the Treasury Department did issue a rule basically saying that it needs to be in a reasonable determination, and that approximately 2.25 hours for every hour taught could be construed as reasonable. But the definition of reasonable is still left up to individual colleges. Colleges across the country, including colleges in Oregon, are working to determine what counts for 30 hours in determining the eligibility of part-time faculty. That piece in and of itself is very difficult in the implementation of the ACA. What this bill essentially does is allows the faculty to aggregate their hours at multiple institutions. How this will be implemented is very problematic, in that each institution first may and probably will define their part-time faculty hours differently. And so what 1 hour is at one institution may not be the same hour at a different institution. Secondly, many of our institutions are on different healthcare plans. Some are in OEBB, some are not. When you include the universities as well, they're in PEB. And so if you have faculty that actually qualify for this, which plan would be offered to them? Who would determine which plan would be offered to them? And under what type of benefits? Because even if our colleges are in OEBB, they may have elected to use different plans within OEBB. Furthermore, the implementation piece of this would be difficult, as it would be very difficult to ascertain at which point do faculty qualify for this. And then what happens when they no longer qualify? Our faculty change every term. The way that our colleges decide how many faculty they're going to have is really depending on how many students come in each term. And so the number of, for example, writing 121 courses we may have one term may vary wildly the next term. And so someone may teach one class one term, may teach three classes the next term, and then back down to one, depending on that demand. And so to somehow a certain at which point do they hit that 30-hour threshold and maintain that would be very difficult to proceed with that. Secondly, once you have determined that someone qualifies, what happens when they no longer teach at the institution by which they get health care? Just as you can see from the written comments, there's multiple issues with trying to implement this. With essentially with colleges, it's not one employer. There are 17 different employers with different collective bargaining agreements, different healthcare plans, different definitions. And so certainly we have colleges that do help with healthcare for their part-time faculty, but trying to assess this across the system would be very difficult. And then lastly, I did want to address the cost of it. We are working to determine what the cost might be with our community colleges. Don't have any firm numbers yet, partly because we don't necessarily know how many faculty are also teaching at other institutions. There was mention of the PERS system, which does do an aggregate of hours. However, it's a smaller threshold of hours and can't necessarily be used for the calculations for this. What we have found for our institutions so far, of those that have responded to me, is it's somewhere between $400,000 and $4 million per institution in terms of implementing this. And so certainly there's concerns from the colleges in terms of the impact that would have on their financial picture and how they might actually find the money to do that. So many issues with this. Wanted to share those with the committee, both in terms of the cost, but actually the implementation of it as well. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Let's go ahead and have Sandy Radu.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. My name is Sandy Radu. I'm from Beaverton, and today I'm testifying as a small business owner and private citizen. I recognize the intent of this bill, and I think the intent of it, like the Affordable Care Act, at some levels is noble, and it is well-intended, but with incredibly bad consequences. What we really need in Oregon in particular is we need less regulation, less government, less interference in businesses so that we can enable employers to have more employees, make job market more competitive so that employers want to offer the benefits and the goodies to get the good employees. I come from the high-tech industry where I was a very highly valued employee. I got all those perks. I got the signing bonuses. I got the carrots dangled in front of me, and it's a wonderful feeling. But even the high-tech industry isn't doing that anymore because the economy has gone down so bad. But it's a good feeling to have. It's a wonderful feeling to be an employer in that situation and be able to offer that. The problem I have with this bill is twofold, other than what I've already said. It's the fact that the burden of proof is on the employer. Now, we are a very small business. The 50 to 99 threshold does not apply to us. When we started this business just before the economy tanked, it was in our dreams and our long-range goals to be there, but because of the economy, we aren't there, and I don't know that we ever will be. If I was to have an employee file a complaint on this, and I have a seasonal business, so their hours vary. Some weeks it may be 12, some weeks it may be 50, some weeks it may be none. We've gone the first 2 months of every year, we have no employees because we have a reduced workload. It's just the way our business is. It's been that way for 8 years. When I let somebody go because I can't afford to pay them and health care, am I subject to having the burden of proof be on me that I didn't do it solely because of health care? My health care premiums since 2007 have gone up 140%, or 240%. I was paying $187 a month per employee. I'm now paying $451, and I don't know how that's going to change the remainder of this year. At $451 a month, that's an equivalent of 50 hours a week at minimum wage. At a 25-hour-a-week employee, that's a half an employee. That's a tremendous burden to place on a small business who can make and break it on 5 hours a week of an employee's help. And to be threatened and have it hanging over my head of a minimum of a $50,000 fine if an employee is disgruntled and wants to allege I committed this crime. It's just unfathomable. And if a complaint was filed, I would shut my doors immediately. I would have no choice. Because let me tell you, when my employees get a paycheck during the week, they take home more than I do. I do understand I'm putting food on their table. I'm putting heat in their home. I'm helping clothe their families. I get that. I take that very seriously. And I would love to be able to offer employees health care. And when the situation improves, I can. But this legislation doesn't do anything to make my market better. It doesn't make anything to make my revenue go up. All it does is make my expenses go up. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Questions or comments?
I have one really quick question. And please understand, I'm extraordinarily supportive of small business. If I understand both the provisions of the Affordable Care Act and what this bill says, if your businesses have fewer than 100 employees, you would not be impacted by this.
No, but I can tell you, it's fewer than 50, I believe.
It depends a little bit on the timing, yes. But, I mean, eventually it'll be fewer than 50. Yeah. At the moment, it's fewer than 100.
I'm not speaking just on my behalf.
I understand that. I guess, you know, I think that the points that you're making are well taken. I guess the question I would ask you, and I want an education on this, okay, this is not meant to be adversarial, is do you think that the same challenges that you're describing or that you, sir, described are felt in that same level by much larger businesses than yours?
I don't think that a company with 100 employees would feel a $50,000 impact the way I would. No, that part is true. This bill does not address this number of employees. It just says if it is reduced, if you reduce the hours solely to have you not eligible. I'm not really incredibly well-versed in that part of the ACA because it doesn't apply to me. What it does do is it applies to a lot of the companies I do business with. I provide services to businesses. That's what I do. And I have seen over the last several years when we first started, our business was growing like gangbusters. Since we started, 9 of our 12 competitors in our area have gone under, and our business has remained flat. That's how much our pie, if you will, has gone down. And I see that if more of those businesses go down, more of my business will go down, and it's a vicious circle because I provide services to businesses.
Thank you.
Senator, one of my concerns is the baby boomers. I happen to be one of those.
You and me both.
I have less interest in risking what I have in net worth because I may not be able to recapture it. So in my company, I was licensed in 36 states, and we were growing, even though I was competing against GE. So a decision might be, I'm going to keep to a certain size as opposed to increase it, the employees.
Okay.
Just because of my age.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much for sharing your stories and testifying. The last three, Caleb Hayes, Jack Dempsey, and Daryl Fuller.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jack Dempsey, representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I will be brief because I know you've heard a lot of the comments on this and due to the late hour. The Oregon Nurses Association supported the ACA and believed that maintaining employer health insurance was a primary tenet of that legislation, and now we have a number of employers that are going around that game in the system, and we believe that's wrong and believe that this legislation will correct that.
Thank you so much,
Jack. I will leave it at that.
I love it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller, on behalf of various small business clients I have. The witnesses from businesses have testified before. I have covered most of the points I intended to, so I'll be brief as well. We're concerned about the requirement that the employer has to prove a negative. We believe that that is a problem that we hope can be at least revised if the bill is going to move forward. And beyond that, we're concerned about the implications that the cost increases have on small businesses. If I have, and again, I understand the numbers, we're talking about over 100, but if I have a group of employees and because of whether it's the ACA or other related costs, I have to make reductions in the number of hours. As an employer, I would certainly want the ability perhaps to keep some key employees who are willing to work for less hours as opposed to having to release some really maybe high-quality employees who are highly skilled and who are willing to stay at the lower hours as opposed to having to terminate people in order to keep other people under the ACA. So I simply believe that it should be an employer's choice when they're looking at increased costs, regardless of what it is. Employers have to figure out the best way to manage not only the cost of their employees, but the other costs that are associated with their business. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Daryl.
Chair Amanda Sanderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Caleb Hayes. I'm here on behalf of the National Association of Social Workers and our 1,800 members here in Oregon. I'll typically start out testimony by quoting our code of ethics, but I'm just going to boil it down for the sake of this issue. As social workers, we work to serve those who are in the most vulnerable of situations, both individually at the case level and then in the political arena. So I'd ask you to just take a moment and consider who is the most vulnerable group of individuals in this situation. And we believe it's the workers who are at risk of falling through the cracks on this. And these people are just that. They're workers working hard to stay off of Medicaid and to support their families. This bill works to protect our community's most vulnerable from falling through those cracks, and we urge your support.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, this is not a question for anybody on the panel, but it's a request to you. We've heard a lot of people express concern that it would be that the employer would be required to prove a negative. And we've also heard people talking about a concern that if there were a voluntary agreement among an employer and employees that everybody was going to go, or a certain number of people were going to go to part-time because of a variety of financial services, that nonetheless the employer would be subject to a cause of action. I would be very grateful if we're going to hear more testimony on this bill at a later date, if we could have someone from BOLI available to testify to determine, because I would be surprised if there were a cause of action, if there were a voluntary agreement, or if an employer cut employees to part-time but then didn't hire anybody else to make up those hours. I mean, to my mind, when I've heard about this bill, I thought that the way it would be proven, or at least begun to be potentially a cause of action, is if an employer cut a bunch of people to part-time and then hired a bunch of other people part-time to end up with the same net number of hours. And I may be missing something, Madam Chair, so if your plan is to hear this bill again, I would be very grateful to have somebody from BOLI offer some input on this.
All right.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Well, we will not be hearing this bill again. It was extremely important for me to have a very good hearing, because to me, a person having health care insurance is the most important, one of the most important things that they can have in order to have good health outcomes. And that's why I am a supporter of the bill. But I had said from the beginning, now, no controversial bills during the short session. And there's no way that we can move this bill now. But I do want to say, regarding the Affordable Care Act, there are over 200,000 people that have signed up for coverage through the Oregon Health Plan and Cover Oregon, and 83,000, and probably the numbers are higher, have enrolled through Cover Oregon. And we are going to have some glitches. I talked with a major employer in Gresham, actually, this morning, and she was telling me that she's having problems because some of her employees can get a better deal through Cover Oregon because their salaries are so low, and so now her pool is smaller, so her rates are going to go up. And so there's a lot of issues and a lot of adjustments that everyone all around are going to be we're going to have to make adjustments, and there are going to be glitches, and there is going to be a transition period. I am hoping that this will still be a very sustainable system, and I know we're going to have some growing pains as we go forward. I still believe that this is the right thing to do. And with that, are there any other comments? Yes, Senator Knope.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we just need to be clear on the 200,000. 170,000 of them signed up for free health care through Medicaid, through the expansion of Medicaid. So about 30,000 people kind of
30,000 are in private coverage.
Right.
And 53,000 are in Medicaid.
Well, signed up through Cover Oregon for Medicaid, but the outreach total is 170,000 people added to the Medicaid rolls. Of course, which we're not paying for, we're just borrowing money. So we're not on a sustainable path.
No, at this point. I'm hoping that we will get there, though. All right, yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Madam Chair, government solutions, think about it. When did business get into the healthcare business? It was during the Nixon administration, okay? Pure and simple, wage and price controls. And that was a way that you could benefit people, was by giving them benefits. So government solutions to problems created by government give me a lot of pause. I wish I had the chair's optimism about where Cover Oregon's going. I think we're hearing a death rattle myself. And and the bottom line is, even if the website works, how are insurance companies supposed to be making a rate case in 3 months? I have no idea. Neither do they. Okay. We have created one hell of a mess. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments? All right. Well, thank you. I want to just make sure that we have the bills to carry over.
One.
We're carrying over 1526. And
1560.
And 1523, correct?
15, 19.
And we rescheduled the 1579 from yesterday to Thursday. The synchronization.
So we got less of an agenda Thursday than we had today.
Yeah, that's right.
You were really kicking stuff out.
You want
girl.
To adjourn?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We're adjourned.
Oh. Oh.